Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart. Got Ron Carlson producing.
Hi.
We're sans Brian Myers, however. He is dealing with car problems with his business.
Unfortunately, he had
one literally blow up. No, just kidding. this car had like over 300,000 miles on it, and finally lost the engine.
It probably got really tired and just said, no, I'm not doing anymore.
So, yeah, it's like, I'm done. I'm going to be done in Western Iowa. I could think of worse places to be done.
That's
I guess
true.
So, we'll be missing Brian, but Ron's going to have to fill in and jump in and, you know, because I'm going to need somebody to banter with.
Indeed.
We have a week to the Iowa caucus, and I can hardly wait. Because I don't know about you, Ron, but I'm getting sick of political ads.
I was going to say, hardly wait for it to be over, right?
Yeah, hardly wait for it to be over. I'm excited for caucus night, too, but it's just, next week is going to be insane
yeah.
busy. My family are actually decided to go back to see my mother-in-law the weekend before the caucus.
Oh,
and I
no.
said, I don't think I'll be coming with you because I don't think I'm going to have much of a life this week.
Yeah.
If things go according to plan, I want to catch as many campaign events as I can.
Certainly.
Because this week, so actually, I didn't make anything. I'm going to a rally this weekend, but unfortunately, this week's been kind of a bust as far as going to campaign stuff. So I want to make up for it next week. So anyway, going to be busy. You know, we talk a lot about Republican debate stuff, but today I wanted to do something special.
Ah,
because we hardly ever talk about the Democrat debates, and I would say that is primarily because, well, they're not as interesting. But we wanted to bring it to you. We wanted to highlight it because it seems like they have it. They do their debates at times where nobody's watching. During major football games, during the Big Ten Championship, they had a debate in Iowa during
Indeed.
The Big Ten Championship when Iowa was playing. They had one Sunday that we're going to highlight during Downton Abbey. Downton? Am I pronouncing?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not something I get into, but, you know, my girls like it.
Yeah.
Not that they would watch Democrat debate anyway, but... You know, you're making people, you know, choose.
Right.
And they don't want to. And looking at the ratings, I mean, the people watching Republican debates have been, the ratings are far, far above where, you know, Democrats have, what they have been getting. I think that a lot of that's by design.
Yeah.
I heard one guy call it this the Hyde Hillary operation.
I could see that.
Yeah,
I could definitely see that.
But we don't want Hillary to hide. We want to put her out there, and not only her, but Bernie Sanders, who, according to the last CNN ORC international poll, which we're going to talk a little bit more about in the third segment, he's leading Hillary.
Wow.
In Iowa, he's leading her in New Hampshire. She's probably getting very nervous, so we got to pay a little more attention to Bernie Sanders. Anyway. We got some clips. We want you to hear from the candidates themselves. We don't want, you know, I don't want to put just my spin on it, but I want you to hear. Bernie gets, you know, he was asked about gun control, and he launches into some bragging about his gun control bona fides.
Well, I think Secretary Clinton knows that what she says is very disingenuous. I have a D-minus voting record from the NRA. I was in 1988. There were three candidates running for Congress in the state of Vermont. I stood up to the gun lobby and came out and maintained the position that in this country, we should not be selling military-style assault weapons. I have supported from day one an instant background check to make certain that people who should not have guns do not have guns. And that includes people with criminal backgrounds, people who are mentally unstable. I support what President Obama is doing in terms of trying to close the gun show loopholes, and I think it should be a federal crime.
Can we stop there for a second? What gun show loopholes? That's what I'd like to ask him. What gun show loopholes are you talking about, Senator? There are none. There's this mentality that people go and they buy guns and they're not screened and they're buying guns from people who aren't licensed, who aren't doing background checks, and that's simply not true. Crazy. But I thought it was kind of interesting that he, you know, decided to lead with, I got D-minus from the NRA. You know, the NRA is actually a pretty bipartisan organization. I've noticed they will give, and there are Democrats that do have high ratings with them because those are the sane Democrats who know that we have an inalienable right to defend ourselves and that ultimately it's not about guns killing people. It's people who kill people.
That's right.
Whether it's a gun or a bomb or a knife. And the only thing that some of these silly gun control measures do is just keep weapons out of the hands of people who would carry them legally. But because they obey the law, they follow the law and they don't get the weapons. But that does that. I can't imagine a criminal yet who'd say, oh, I'm not gonna buy that gun under the table because New York has banned them.
Sure.
So
sure.
I'm not gonna do that, man. I'll just have to rob that store with a knife.
Yep.
No, not gonna happen.
That's correct.
So it's insane, and this whole thing too. I supported the ban against military style assault weapons. You know what that ban is, Ron?
No, I don't actually.
It's against weapons that look scary.
Because, so it's just an appearance issue.
Right, because everything that's on the list of assault-style weapons are things that are totally cosmetic.
Wow.
There are hunting rifles that are probably just as powerful as, say, an AR-15 or or the military version. Well, obviously, automatic weapons are banned, and frankly, I can understand it. Actually, I think in most cases, being former military, we were told automatic is really kind of a waste of ammo. So they for a while had the M16A2, which instead of going the selector switch didn't go to full ammo. Instead, it went to a 3-round burst, which you were able to control a little bit better. But they generally recommended we not use full auto automatic weapons anyway. So those are already banned and. You know, mostly off the streets, except criminals find, you know, they get their hands on it. But
sure.
But as far as a semi-automatic military assault weapon, they're talking about, you know, the handrails, they're talking about sights, they're talking about hand grips, things that don't make this weapon any more deadly or powerful. So it's crazy. Want to move on because Bernie's just he's a delight, he's a gem. We could probably focus our entire show on Bernie. We're not going to, but we could. Bernie answers because he was asked, how are you going to win a general election when you define yourself as a democratic socialist? I'm shocked to see that in an NBC News debate that they even asked that question, but they did. That's clip two.
How will you win a general election labeling yourself a democratic socialist?
Because what I believe in and what I was just saying, the Democratic Party needs major reform. To those of you in South Carolina, you know what, in Mississippi, we need a 50-state strategy so that people in South Carolina and Mississippi can get the resources that they need. Instead of being dependent on super PACs, what we need is to be dependent on small individual campaign contributors. We need an agenda that speaks to the needs of working families and low-income people, not wealthy campaign contributors.
Yeah, but
we
Senator,
need to
you
expand.
Can...
We need to expand what the input into the Democratic Party. I am very proud that in this campaign, we have seen an enormous amount of excitement from young people, from working people. We have received more individual contributions than any candidate in the history of this country.
Okay. First of all, he didn't really answer the question.
I noticed that.
Before I go on, just you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio on the Truth Network, 99.3 FM. You were just listening to Bernie Sanders' answer, not answer, actually, the question about how he will win a general election, defining himself as a democratic socialist. I'm still not sure the difference between a democratic socialist and a socialist. I guess democratic socialists, they vote on it, and socialists, they don't. I don't know.
Maybe
but
that's it.
But that's probably it. But the fact is, the ads just, you know, write themselves if he wins the general election. And he's talking about all these young people are backing his campaign, and he's attracted he's kind of like the Trump of the Democratic Party right now.
Mm-hmm.
which amazes me that it seems like the Democratic Party this year, they're the party of the old grumpy white people.
Mm-hmm.
which I find fascinating.
Yep.
But he's kind of like, you know, as far as grumpiness, kind of like the Ron Paul of from back
sure.
from 2012 2008. Just kind of cranky. Young people love him because he talks about free stuff. I mean, that's his message, free stuff.
There you go, free stuff.
Yep. And I don't think they haven't lived enough life and paid enough taxes to realize that free stuff isn't free.
Right.
Somebody pays for it. And eventually, if they make enough money, it'll be them.
Right.
So, of course, who knows? With the Democratic Party, we may all be on welfare. so maybe nobody will make anything.
Yeah.
So anyway, another interesting clip was Hillary Clinton talks about the state of race in America, which I thought was interesting.
This is a community that has suffered a lot of heartache in the last year. Of course, as you mentioned, the church shootings. We won't forget the video of Walter Scott being shot in the back while running from police. We understand that a jury will decide whether that police officer was justified, but it played straight to the fears of many African-American men that their lives are cheap. Is that perception, or in your view, is it reality?
Well, sadly, it's reality. And it has been heartbreaking and incredibly outraging to see the constant stories of young men like Walter Scott, as you said, who have been killed by police officers. There needs to be a concerted effort to address the systemic racism in our criminal justice system. And that requires a very clear agenda for retraining police officers, looking at ways to end racial profiling, finding more ways to really bring the disparities that stalk our country into high relief. One out of three African-American men may well end up going to prison. That's the statistic. I want people here to think what we would be doing if it was one out of three white men. And very often, the black men are arrested, convicted, and incarcerated for offenses that do not lead to the same results for white men. So we have a very serious problem that we can no longer...
Okay. She's bringing up a problem that is obviously there's an issue. I thought it was interesting that she said there's systemic racism
mm-hmm.
within the criminal justice system. There might be, and I'm not. My wife and I had a chance to do ride-alongs with some Miami police officers when we lived down in Miami, Florida, mm-hmm. for our urban sociology class. And we picked up on there's definitely some racial tension. And at that point, it wasn't white on black. It was Cubans on black.
Oh, wow.
Which was interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to deny that that doesn't exist. But I think to say there's systemic racism in the system totally misses the point of the problem. Having worked with juvenile justice, I know there are issues because, well, first of all, we see kids locked up on nonviolent offenses all the time, and it seems like kids had it wasn't so much race as it was more socioeconomic class,
mm-hmm.
Because rich white kids getting busted with with drugs, they weren't getting locked up in the Polk County Juvenile Detention Center if they were in Valley or I never saw a kid from Valley or Dowling.
Yeah.
In that lockup. I always saw them from East Side. So you have that. I think it's more of a poverty issue. I think it's more of a not being able to afford proper representation. I also think, you know, there are issues with certain neighborhoods where when you got gang violence, when you have drugs that are prevalent, it leads to a problem. And it's a generational problem when you have the breakdown of the family. And, you know, so there's a lot of underlying causes to this. And to just lay it all as, oh, it's just racism, I think is brushing over, you know, what the problem is and what the fixes might be. And certainly some of that might exist, but her answer was very simplistic, I think,
and definitely
divisive. Mm-hmm. Clinton talks about her relationship with Vladimir Putin. I think we have enough time for that.
It's interesting. It's one, I think, of respect. We've had some very tough dealings with one another.
We can stop right there.
I know that he's someone that you...
We've heard enough. One of respect. One of respect. If he respected United States foreign policy, do you think he would be poking Ukraine right now?
Right.
And, you know, invaded Crimea? Crimea? No, that wouldn't have happened. I can't say that word today.
That's okay.
Anyway, there you have it, at least parts of it. There were some couple clips that we left unplayed, but you know what? That's okay. You'll live. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Van Aart with Ron Carlson. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
That just wasn't the same without Brian in
studio. It definitely wasn't.
No, but we tried. We tried.
There you go.
Brian, we need you back next week so we can do this properly.
Indeed.
On the line, we have a very special guest, a friend of mine, Iowa House Majority Leader Chris Hagenow. He's a Republican out of Windsor Heights. Which district is that?
It's District 43.
43.
Although, don't expect anybody to remember that part of it.
Okay. So. Well, you are the newly minted majority leader. Just a quick story. I think I ran the shortest draft campaign known to man, like 2 hours or something, because yep. I was trying to get Representative Hagenow to run for speaker. I'm kind of looking at majority leader. Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself. How long you've been in the House?
I'll just jump in on
okay.
it. This is my fourth term in the House, so I'm going into year eight right now. I was first elected in 2008, managed to win when Barack Obama first got elected, winning my legislative district. And so we've had a couple of close elections along the way.
Didn't you have one that was like under 10 votes?
Yeah, the 2012.
That's right.
After a recount, ended up at 22 votes.
22 votes.
You know, you see the ticker go on the bottom of the screen on election night, and it says 50-50, and but yet you've got the check mark, but you have to sweat it out. So
right.
But yeah, you know, it's the voters have decided, even if by a slim margin, to continue to have me up there, and you know, I think we're continuing to make a difference. But so yeah, it's been good. You know, and trying to continue to make progress where we can.
Mm-hmm.
And looking forward to, you know, what lies ahead. If we can, you know, right now we have divided government in Iowa,
right.
We have the Democrat Senate, and so we have to get done what we can. And then looking forward to today when maybe we don't have all the good stuff getting blocked. So, you know, we got to fight that on two fronts.
Right, right. Yeah, it's like, all right, the House passed something. It's like I'm constantly writing about what the Iowa House does. And
yeah.
And generally with the Iowa Senate, it's like, stop this bill.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, no, it's good. It's been good. You know, we had leadership elections last summer after Speaker Paulson mm-hmm. announced that he wasn't going to run for re-election, so he was going to step down from being Speaker. And so then we had Linda Uppmeyer as our new Speaker now,
mm-hmm.
and myself as the Majority Leader. So we've got a new team, and I think so far so good. I think things are going great.
Now, you served before that as Assistant Majority Leader, correct?
I was the majority whip.
Majority. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
You were the bad guy. You were wrangling everybody in, making sure they're voting right.
Yeah. I actually like to tell the story the first time I wanted to, because the caucus elects us to these. It's not necessarily a seniority thing or anything like that.
Okay.
You know, you have to get your colleagues to put you in these positions.
Right.
When I was first running for whip, I went to, I know you know, Representative Dawn Pettengill.
Uh-huh.
And I went over to Dawn and said, you know, Dawn, I'd like to have the opportunity to be the majority whip. I'd like to have your support. And she said, well, that's great, Chris, you know, but don't ever come and ask to whip my vote. So, you know, it was, she's pretty independent.
Yeah, she is.
To her credit.
And she's pretty she's direct, too. She
absolutely.
You never have to wonder where you stand with her.
Yeah. I love her to death. She just said, but just don't come over and get my vote.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, just don't do your job with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's all good.
All right.
She's great.
So we're 2 weeks into a new legislative session. You've got to hear the condition of the state address, the condition of the judiciary address, condition of the National Guard. I think we've had that already, too.
It's coming this week.
It's coming this week. Okay.
That one's later for whatever reason.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, so what are your thoughts on what you heard with the condition of the state address?
Well, you know, the big thing with the condition of the state address is the governor laying out two or three things that are his policy initiative, and then he releases his budget, which is the starting point for what we talk about. And
right.
I think it was fairly well received. You know, there's some ideas in there, some things that we want to work on, some things that maybe weren't quite as well received, but yet we appreciate the ideas, and we'll get to work on it. And we understand that it's an election year, and,
right.
and you know, thematically, some of the really big things, you know, this might be year one of a multi-year process of working on them, but
right.
You know, I think we've got some good stuff to work on.
Okay, so what are some of the good things that you are good starting
well,
points?
Well, I think ultimately we've got a starting off point for us to be able to build a balanced budget again.
Okay.
And that's something that we have done each of the 5 years that we've been in the majority, and that wasn't past practice before. And it's something that I think Iowans instinctively expect us to do,
mm-hmm.
but yet isn't what actually had happened in the past. So, and we look at it not just, okay, let's look at every dollar we can possibly spend and then spend it and call it a balanced budget. We say, how much money is coming in ongoing revenue?
Right.
How much money... And then that's how much we're going to spend. We're not going to kick the can down the road or hide the ball or spend these one-time pots of money and building some ongoing expense and growing government to do it and hope that we can figure it out later. So, but we've been successful each of those 5 years, and we're setting out to do it again this year. And I know sometimes House Republicans are a broken record about that, but it really does involve a lot of work and
right.
being willing to say, you know, that we understand that that might be a valuable program or line item at a certain amount,
mm-hmm.
but it just doesn't fit this year, and we've got to do all these other priority needs that we got to do. And so I think we've been very successful in that. It really changed the tone and how the whole budget works.
Okay, so I know some, you know, complaints I hear from the cheap seats anyway whenever this comes out, it's like we keep on increasing the budget year after year after year. Is there any, are we going to actually ever see any cuts?
Well, I will tell you that that budget would certainly look different. Again, going back to the balance of power in the Iowa legislature, that budget certainly would look different if we were crafting it all on our own.
Sure.
Okay. And secondly, I would say that because of the growth of things like Medicaid and education funding in the state, is that we actually are making cuts in a lot of the other areas just to be able to do, on Medicaid, for example, the requirement that's passed down from the federal government.
Right.
And so when you see that overall, bottom line number of the state budget, yes, it grows every year, and some of it needs to, but there's a lot of truing up the budget, of fixing some of those past practices in there that were bad, and so and also absorbing some of these things the federal government sends down. So when you see that change that's maybe happened year over year, that's not always just a growth in government factor in there as well. So I think that's another important piece to make sure. And looking forward, we're always looking for ideas.
Right.
To say, you know, here's how we save the taxpayer some money. And it's, again, every year, every line I'm in the budget, we're trying to make progress wherever we can.
Great. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio on the Truth Network, 99.3 FM. On the line, we have Iowa House Majority Leader Chris Hagenow. We were just talking about the budget. Now, education funding is obviously some place where Republicans and Democrats don't quite see eye to eye. Is that, we're going to see that's going to be the case again this year?
I think in terms of the numbers that are thrown out initially, that's obviously true. At the end of the year last year, Republicans sent over a 2% growth in state aid, and Democrats were at 4%, and so that's kind of the framework where we're at, and we'll work it out and figure that out. I mean, I think Republican and Democrat alike, we understand that you need to have a healthy, effective public education system, and that really is important. We all share that. What we get concerned about is overpromising.
Right.
Okay. Well, everybody. Oh, let's just give K-12 education everything and then some.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as we saw in the past, when Governor Culver was governor, you overpromise, and then you have to come back and cut that money later.
Right.
And that doesn't do anybody any good. So we're just committed that the commitments we make to K-12 education are going to be sustainable, that we can live up to them.
Well, it seems like, from what I've seen, it seems like the answer for a lot of Democrats is like, we're just going to throw money at K-12 education.
Yeah.
And that's going to improve things.
That's right. And our focus is, let's focus on outcomes and student achievement. Mm-hmm. And that really ought to be the focus in getting those dollars into the classroom. And so we have proposed things from time to time that we think would help to give local school districts more flexibility to spend those dollars to get more out of it.
Right.
And continue to do that. And there's a number of things in there that can happen. And, and House Republicans are also committed to school choice.
Right.
And, finding ways to make sure that whatever educational setting that you choose for your child as a parent is available to you and is an option and works well without unnecessary government influence. I mean, you and I, Shane, have had that conversation for years.
Right.
But it's an important part of the overall picture of educating students in Iowa. And if you focus on parents and you focus on students, I think that's a better paradigm to have going into the conversation.
Right. Well, I know there's going to be another education savings account bill that'll be brought forward. Choice is obviously something I know you've championed over the years. Are we going to see any traction? Because last year, I don't think it even made it out of committee, did it?
Yeah, it was, there's so many different ways to craft those sorts of proposals. And I know that advocates are working on, what's a new way to go about this to try and get at it. And so I think you'll see a new proposal this year. I get in trouble when I start trying to predict the future in the legislature. There's so many twists and turns.
You
frequently end up just being wrong. So
right.
But yeah, I think we'll see a bill, and that's important to a lot of legislators, important to a lot of House Republicans. So
One thing I thought was interesting was prior to the legislative session, the State Board of Education put forward they were trying to get mandate the Smarter Balanced Assessments, and the Administrative Rules Committee shot them down unanimously, mm-hmm. which just actually just delays it for a year.
Right.
I'm curious, why is it that when a rules committee shoots down a rule, it can still go into effect a year later? Could you?
Well, yeah, the whole laws and the structure of the Administrative Rules Committee is fairly complicated.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, it is the legislative branch being able to preserve some control over the promulgation of rules in the executive branch, the balance of powers thing.
Right.
And they can do session delays, but ultimately those have to go back, and we could vote down the rule in the legislature. You can do the delay, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, exactly what action the Rules Committee took in there, I'd actually defer to you on that.
It was session delay, yeah.
Yeah, session delay. Uh-huh. So it gives us the opportunity to come back if we wanted to nullify that rule,
okay.
Which I haven't seen that bill yet.
I just thought it was fascinating that it was unanimous.
Yeah.
I totally wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. Well, on the assessments, there is, I think there's some growing concern about it, and it's not a necessarily partisan that, I hear from schools and from, teachers that, we're over-testing and there's too much in the classroom and it's expensive, it consumes our time. But yet, at the same time, I think we want to be able to have some data and make sure that kids are learning what they need to learn. So there's a balance there, but there's a lot of concern in there, not just from the content or the type of test, but just the hoops that we require teachers and districts to go through. So
great.
It's interesting the way the politics of that plays out sometimes.
We just have a few seconds left. What's one bill that you hope passes this year?
Oh boy, there's a whole bunch of bills I hope pass.
Just your favorite? What's
my favorite? I'd like to see us do something on school choice.
Okay,
something to just make it easier for kids. But I fundamentally what I'm going to be working on this year is making sure that budget balances.
Okay, great. We appreciate it, and people can if you can go to legis.iowa.com, legis.iowa.gov. Excuse me.
.gov. Yeah.
.gov. To find out what bills have been filed, to catch up on what the legislature is doing. Thank you, Representative Hagenow, for coming on. This is Caffeine.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
It.
No problem. This is Caffeine Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give them a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. Now we've come to our time to do a news rundown, news you could use. Top of the segment here, Chris Cecilia, I'm probably not pronouncing, I've always had a hard time pronouncing his last name, Cecilia.
Anyway, don't tell him if I mispronounced it. With the Washington Post, he wrote, "Who had the worst week in Washington? Hillary Clinton." For Hillary Clinton, it's starting to look a lot like deja vu all over again. Start a bid for the Democratic presidential nomination as a giant frontrunner? Check. Raise tens of millions of dollars and look unbeatable for large swaths of the year before the primary start? Check. An insurgent challenger running to her ideological left? Check. Collapsing poll numbers on the eve of the actual votes? Check. Over the past week or so, Clinton has watched as her national polling lead over Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, a self-avowed socialist, has shrunk. And far more important, Clinton's standing vis-a-vis Sanders in the key early voting states of Iowa and New Hampshire has eroded as well. In Iowa, after holding a high single-digit lead at worst for months, Clinton now finds herself in a dead heat with the caucuses just over a week away. The Real Clear Politics average polling or polling average gives Clinton an edge of less than 5 points. Sanders has always run stronger in New Hampshire than in Iowa, but of late, several polls suggest he is widening his steady lead over the former Secretary of State. In the Real Clear Politics polling average, Sanders is up almost 13 points. Lose both of those states early next month, and Clinton's inevitability bubble bursts, period. Very true.
Wow.
And I think things could look very bad for her if he wins these first two states.
Well, I heard a report this week at an event she was at, and she didn't even bother to take questions. She just left after she was done.
Because voters just love that.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell that, she, you know, I don't want to damage myself even further, perhaps.
Right.
You know,
right.
Gracious.
And just, what a state of the Democratic Party when a socialist, avowed socialist, not that Hillary Clinton's not.
Mm-hmm.
She has socialist leanings. She just won't admit it. So at least we appreciate Bernie Sanders' honesty.
Mm-hmm.
So what a, wow. A socialist could end up being their nominee. You know that CNN ORC poll in Iowa that was released Thursday that had Trump up by 11 points?
Wow.
Maybe it was Wednesday. I can't remember exactly when it was
gracious.
Released. In outlier. Because here's why. You know, latest CNN or RNC International Caucus poll had Donald Trump up 37%, Ted Cruz at 26%, Marco Rubio 14%, Ben Carson at 6%, which is, man, he's tanking. Then a tie between the number five position between Jeb Bush and Mike Huckabee at 3%, Rand Paul at 2%, and then Chris Christie, Carly Fiorina, John Kasich, and Rick Santorum all have 1%.
Right.
You know, the candidates who have gained since the last poll, according to that, is Trump by 4, Cruz by 6, Rubio by 3, and Huckabee by 1. And Carson's the biggest loser with the 10-point drop
right.
since their last poll.
Right.
But here's the thing. This poll only had 266 likely Republican caucus goers. Bear that in mind.
Gracious.
Here's some other polls that were done during the same time period. The Monmouth College poll was conducted on the 18th and 19th. They had 687 likely Republican caucus goers. The Loras College survey was conducted between January 13th and the 18th. They had 500 likely Republican caucus goers. So Trump in the Monmouth College survey is behind Cruz by 2 points. Trump and Cruz are statistically tied in the Loras College survey. But while here's the thing, the methodology, you know, calls the accuracy of the CNN RNC poll. Sure. Trump people are going, and they're going crazy. It's like, chill. This is not Lear. When you have two polls that are basically showing this race in a statistically dead heat,
mm-hmm.
and then one with a small, I mean, pathetically small sample size showing him with an 11-point lead, something
right.
is wrong.
Yeah.
They use a sample based upon random digit dialing, which means they screened down from 2,002 adults to find 266 self-screened likely Republican caucus goers. The survey criteria for a likely participant is based upon the stated response of the respondent and not tied to a state voter registration file.
Ah.
So this person could be completely lying.
Right, right. Just to skew things.
The looser the definition for a likely caucus goer, those polls tend to favor Trump and Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
The tighter the criteria and the tighter the screening, I think the more accurate the polling is. And also,
to illustrate the absurdity of this methodology, the survey sample implies, okay, 2002 adults, then you have 266 Republicans. That's saying that we're going to have a turnout, implies we're going to have a turnout at or near 320,000 Republicans, just the Republican caucus.
Yeah.
For comparison, in 2012, we only had 120,000 people.
Wow.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So they needed to have a larger pool where they were calling people, and then they needed to have a larger sample size.
That's right.
To be able to,
yeah.
Because, for instance, you know how in crosstabs of polls, if you ever looked at political polling, you're able to look at how the different subgroups polled.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't list a lot of that because the margin of error was too high, because they had so few.
Sure.
People represented, and as far as how they weighted the poll, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if you're not weighting a poll based on evangelical turnout, your poll results are going to be skewed anyway.
Right.
Now, Loras College, does a pretty good job at that. Branstad, Kathy Obradovich, she's one of my favorite writers at Des Moines Register. I don't always agree with her.
Indeed.
But I do consider her to be very fair. She just lowered the boom on Governor Branstad on his she said the headline was Branstad puts ethanol ahead of caucus future. Governor Terry Branstad's statement Tuesday, Obradovich writes, that he doesn't want Senator Ted Cruz to win Iowa was a dream come true for the ethanol industry. But what about the future of the Iowa caucuses? Branstad, a Republican, has pledged to remain neutral in the campaign for the caucuses. Other governors have done the same as a gesture toward welcoming all candidates to participate in Iowa. Branstad has not endorsed a candidate and has said he won't. He has at times critiqued candidates and campaigns, but has not until now said Iowans shouldn't support one of them. At the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association annual conference Tuesday, Branstad said Cruz was the biggest opponent of renewable fuels, noting Cruz's introduced legislation in 2012 to do away with the renewable fuel standard. That's why he has been invited to this conference. He hasn't supported renewable fuels, and I think it would be a mistake for Iowa to support him, Branstad said, according to Des Moines Register reporters Eller and Petain. I just said their last name. A reporter asked, so you want to see him defeated? Branstad said, yes. Obradovich continues, that doesn't strike me as remaining strictly neutral.
That's right.
Probably understatement of the year. Branstad is putting a special interest, the ethanol industry, has hired his son. His Ooh. Son runs America's renewable future.
Okay.
A little slight conflict of interest there, I think.
I'd say so.
Ahead of the reputation and future of the Iowa caucuses, he's effectively removing the welcome mat for any candidate who doesn't kowtow to big corn. That is so true.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, folks. If we can't tolerate a candidate coming up and standing up and saying no to RFS, which, by the way, if you are conservative, you should be against it because it's the federal mandate. Now, be against all subsidies and all mandates. Let's have a level playing field. Let's have, let's let the free market reign.
There you go.
There you go. This is insane that we have Republicans defending RFS just because Bush passed it. You know what? If the ethanol industry can't stand on its own two feet, maybe it shouldn't exist anymore.
There you go.
And the fact that our economy is so tied to it it should be scary. This is Caffeine and Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Is God punishing me? Does he hate me? What did I do to deserve these trials? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Pain and trials are commonly assumed to be signs that you do not have peace with God. Even the famous sufferer in the Bible, Job, endured accusations from his friends that his hardships were punishment from God. Yet the Bible offers several purposes of trials in the life of a believer. One such purpose is that hard times allow us to experience the fullness of God's comfort and grace to the point that we are able to comfort others that are in affliction. The Bible says, "The God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction, with the comfort with which we ourselves ourselves are comforted by God. If you want peace with God, give us a call at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org. That number again, 515-635-5465.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Ron Carlson producing.
Indeed.
And Brian is out to lunch. No, he's dealing with car issues. And
hopefully they've made some progress.
I hope so. We've missed him today. Just want to invite you, encourage you to check out CaffeinatedThoughts.com because not only do we do a radio program, we blog too.
That's right.
So be sure to go to CaffeinatedThoughts.com. Like us on Facebook. Go to Facebook.com/CAFF, C-A-F-F, Thoughts. Follow us on Twitter as well. That is Twitter.com/CAFF, C-A-F-F, Thoughts. Anyway, we would appreciate anybody who likes us on Facebook and follows us on Twitter. Subscribe to our emails as well. You can do that right from the website. Keep in touch and drop us a line. You can email me. I want to hear from you. If you like the show, hear your thoughts, go email me at shane@caffeinatedthoughts.com. And now we come to what's become my favorite. This is really Brian started this segment, but it's become my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
you can't make this stuff up!
Wisconsin hunters could choose blaze pink protective wear, a first for a U.S. state, if Governor Scott Walker signs a bill intended to draw more women to the sport. The legislation approved by the state Senate late Wednesday with bipartisan support adds blaze pink to the bright orange hats, jackets, and jumpsuits hunters are now required to wear. The bill next goes to Walker, a spokesman said Thursday. Walker would review the legislation, giving no indication on whether he would sign the bill. Tension mounts.
Indeed.
The goal of the bill was to get more men and women off the couch into the woods. Bill sponsor, State Representative Joel Clefish has said, the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin is Rebecca Clefish. There's got to be relations.
I think
somewhere.
There's a connection there.
I'm thinking. Wisconsin would be the first U.S. state to allow hunters to wear blaze pink, the International Hunter Education Association said. Arkansas allows hunters to wear fluorescent chartreuse, which Ron was telling me is kind of a green, yellowish, bright,
yes,
bright color, which is, I looked at it, very ugly, but, but very bright and really
catches your attention.
Here's the thing. Not that this was all that unbelievable, but I'm thinking, I want to wear. Was there kind of any debate on this? I'm like, no, I don't want blaze pink. Blaze pink is of the devil.
It's not manly enough.
Well, it's like you don't have to wear blaze pink. It's for the ladies.
That's right.
Not that men can't wear blaze pink. We don't want a stereotype.
I've got a friend that probably would choose to wear the blaze pink, actually.
Does not like the bright orange?
He's just into that.
I'm surprised they're actually debating this, because it should be just, as long as you don't look like a deer or a pheasant, and you're wearing something bright, do we really care what color you're wearing?
Yeah.
Because if you're wearing, like, fluorescent purple, I know there isn't any animal in the woods that's fluorescent purple. That's mission accomplished.
There you go.
And probably, I'm just wondering, what disadvantage this has put the hunter when they started these rules of having to wear these fluorescent colors. Now the deer says, I see you.
Yeah.
I'm running away now because I can see you from a longer distance now that you're not all camo. Well, you're still semi-camoed up. But
wasn't part of the deal with the orange was the animals actually can't pick that color up as well or
something?
That could
be. I don't really know. I don't hunt. So I just find this intriguing that they're having this conversation. Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Hey, if you want to send us a story idea for this last segment, you can send it to your crazy story, odd news, to story@caffeinatethoughts.com. This is Shane Vanner with Brian, not with Brian Myers, with Ron Carlson. We'll see you next week.
Bye, folks.